These lessons are recorded. They're on our website under the Ladies Bible Class. They're password protected because I didn't want frankly, I didn't want men going in and listening. That would make me feel uncomfortable about teaching. So the password to it is LBC, as in Ladies Bible Class. Really hard one to figure out. So if you have a need to go back or listen or want to share with another female friend, feel free to do that. Yes, ma'am? Go to our website, soundteaching.org, and it's listed under sermons and lessons, I think. But the password is LBC, Ladies Bible Class, all lowercase. So it's there should you want to hear it. Carol was talking about forgiveness, and while that's not exactly the topic we're thinking about, I think it's going to hit every single topic that we talk about in these lessons. Actually, I did that cover page, and it says attributes of a godly woman. What we're looking at are attributes of ungodly people, actually. So you have to kind of flip. It's not exactly an appropriate title. I got to work on that some more. But today I thought we'd talk about greed. So here's the question. Is greed more prominent in our century than it was in the first century? And yes or no, why do you think that? Mother?
I think it's the same because human nature has not changed. And greed has appeared from the beginning of time. And I think it's just fallen down. I think we're free from that sin.
Okay. Laura?
At first I thought it's still greed. Then I kind of thought, when I look at our society, children have a whole lot more power now than I think they used to. So I think it's more prominent as far as we give a lot more to our children, and so there's
greed in our children.
I think if you grow with that, it's even worse. I mean, we're a very quick fix society.
We are. So we are. Patsy.
Something written in the 5th century. Our youth now love luxury. They have bad manners, contempt for authority. They show disrespect for their elders, love chatter in places of exercise. They no longer rise when elders enter the room. They contradict their parents, chatter before company, gobble food, and tyrannize their teachers.
That's the fifth.
5th century Socrates. Also, if you don't mind,
go ahead.
In Ecclesiastes 1, 9 and 10, that which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us.
Nothing new under the sun. I saw another hand. Debbie, was it you?
We have a whole lot more to be greedy for than they did from the century. As far as the extent of the greed, probably not. I mean, if you want it really, really bad, you want it.
Right.
But we have so much
more options
these days to be.
And yet you have to wonder if maybe that wouldn't have increased the greed in the first century, since there was so little. Maybe there were so many people with so little that greed was even more widespread. I think the point is that it's not different. Human nature allows for greed. And it's our goal as Christian women to push that down. Now, I think it's a very, very difficult thing to say to ourselves, I'm greedy. We just don't want to do that. That doesn't feel good. But I think if we were to all look carefully at ourselves, we might find that in some aspect of our life. Maybe not overarching across all of our lives, but in some way. It's defined by Webster's, which incidentally, Vines did not have this word, so I could look it up there. It's an excessive desire for getting or having, especially wealth. Desire for more than one needs or deserves. So it's not just wanting. It's wanting kind of on steroids, you know? It's wanting more than you need, more than you can use, and a continuous gathering of goods, of things you can touch.
Never being satisfied.
Never being satisfied.
Content.
And what did Paul say about contentment? I've learned in whatever state I am to be content. Tell me, Joe.
Don't you think that jealousy is one of the greatest?
I do. In fact, next week's lesson is on jealousy and envy. Or at least that's the title that I've written down.
Covetousness.
I have a question. So would you draw a distinction between like greediness over wealth versus other things like relationships or authority?
I would for this lesson, because I believe that here we're focusing on monetary things, possessions. I think we will touch some of those other topics when we start talking about jealousy and envy and those kinds of issues. So for the purposes of this lesson, yes, but I see where you would can meld them together.
See, even in your definition, after you get started in it, then it says especially wealth. So yeah, there's other areas
there are.
That could apply, but especially wealth.
Right.
Monetary.
And like I said, for the purpose of this lesson, we're going to talk about things you can touch. Greed for money, possessions, and those kinds of things. But can you be greedy for power and all those things? Sure. Sure you can.
The more you have, the more you want.
Unfortunately, that is the human element in us. I think it's important that we note that all across time, the 5th century writing, here's the Thomas Aquinas said, greed is a sin against God. Inasmuch as man condemns things eternal for the sake of temporal things. So what he's saying is, in his opinion, greed's a sin against God because in looking for possessions and money and temporal things of the world, we put God aside. And I do think that's a very big outcome of greed itself, that it causes us to lose sight of what's important. You know, where are you going to lay up your riches? You're going to lay up your riches where your heart is. And if your heart's here on this earth, that's what you're going to be concerned with. Dante, and I'll tell you, I read that once upon a time, but 1,000 years ago. But the penitents were bound and laid face down to think about how they had spent too much time with earthly thoughts, and now they needed to have spiritual thoughts. The whole idea of purgatory is that whole other issue, and we won't even go into that. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting that throughout time, people have written about greed and how it moves God aside. That the desire for personal wealth and gain pushes aside the thought of spiritual matters. But in our society, greed is not necessarily considered a bad thing. Now, Ivan Bosky, you know, spent time in jail, who's convicted for insider trading and made a ton of money. Ton of money. But his life inspired that movie Wall Street, where they said, and he said, greed's all right, by the way. Nothing wrong with being greedy. Now, obviously, I think he's way wrong on that, but I do think there's a difference between, and we'll talk about it a little more in the lesson, about wanting to acquire things within the reasonable aspect of life and greed. Laura?
But I also think that they use greed the wrong way. They look at greed as just wanting more. Like, when I first read about greed, I thought, everybody, you want to be better. You want to have more as far as, as a Christian, I want to be the best Christian I can be. But greed takes it to that ugly level, to where you're wanting to eat, like, when you don't deserve, you've not worked for it, you've not earned that order,
right.
And there's a difference
right.
in that way. I think they misuse it, like even he did.
I don't think he misused it. I think it's exactly what he meant. The man everything to get possessions. I think he meant, I'm wealthy because I'm greedy and there's nothing wrong with that. So I don't think he's using it. I know what you're saying, but I think Ivan Bosky believed in greed. It made him wealthy, and he didn't care what it did to anybody else. So, but you're right. There are many different ways that the word could be used, but in its pure form, it's desire for things to the exclusion of other people's feelings, other people's wants and needs, God, It's all about the money. And you hear that all the time. It's all about the money.
I guess, I don't know what he thought, but maybe greed helps some people push themselves to where they excel at things.
Yeah. At certain things. At the cost of a lot of others. But you could be right on that. There's a show on called American Greed, and it profiles all these scam artists and con artists, and it doesn't do it in a good way. I mean, it talks about how they're evil and doing all this, but at the same time, they are now infamous. They're on television. People know who they are. So in a kind of a perverse way, their greed is being celebrated. I don't think that's the intent, perhaps, of this show, because of the way they produce it. It's not in a, you know, look how smart he was and he did all this. But it still has made these famous. So my point in bringing that up is that good for us as a society? And I'm not sure I know the answer to that, but why do you think it's not?
Well, we're supposed to think the good things. And if we're seeing this, then we're not thinking on the good things.
That's true. My feeling is that it allows children, some children, to say, well, look what he did, and he got on television. And that overtakes their thinking, not he did evil and therefore he's on television. Just, you know, in a young child's brain, look, he's on TV. I could be on TV. I could do that. So I don't think it's a good thing for us, personally.
That has worried me about some of our school invasions, that's going to be a thing in the future because TV is there instantly. As far as I'm concerned.
Well, if you read, unfortunately, about serial killers, a lot of them will say, I want people to know who I am. I want to be famous. And they've lost track, first of all, just on the definition of famous and infamous, and secondly, of human worth. You know. So maybe we'll have a whole lesson on television. I like television, so it's kind of hard for me to stay real focused the way I should, because I think television has a lot of good things on it, but I think it has way more bad things on it. Yeah, it does. That's right. We're dwelling on the things of the world, not the things of eternal nature. So, what does God have to say to us about greed? What do our possessions mean to us? Personally, I want us all to think about this ourselves. How willing are we to put them second in our lives? Consider the rich young ruler. He was operating under the impression that he had kept the law and the commandments his whole life. You know, and he said, what else do I need to do? He had done the letter of the law. He'd kept all those commandments. But when Christ said, sell all your possessions and come follow me, what happened? Sorrowful. Let's read that scripture. I'll read this one, and somebody else can look up Luke 12 for me. Who would like to do that? Okay, Amy. But I'm going to go ahead and read in Matthew 19, starting with verse 16. Now behold, one came and said to him, good teacher, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life? So he said to him, why do you call me good? No one's good but one, that is God. But if you want to enter life, keep the commandments. Now first of all, he starts out and he's saying, what's the one thing I'm missing? Right off the bat, that makes me a little concerned with his attitude. What's the one thing I'm missing? Not, Lord, I'm in need of you. What can I do? But I've done all these things, so what's left? What am I missing? And he said, keep the commandments. So he said to him, which ones? And Jesus said, you shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, honor your father and mother, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And the young man said, all these things I've kept from my youth. What do I still lack? And Jesus said to him, if you want to be perfect, go, sell what you have and give to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven, and come follow me. But when the young man heard that saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. Now, I've heard a lot of people say, and it's, I think it is true, but I think there may be more to it. He went away sorrowful because he didn't want to give up those possessions. I think that's true. I also think he may have gone away sorrowful because he didn't want to give up the possessions, and he knew what he was giving up. I mean, Jesus had just told him what he was giving up. So he was sorrowful, but he made the decision anyway, even knowing what he was giving up. And I am afraid that's so true with so many of us, so many people who are in the world. They know, they've read, they understand, but they're willing to give it up for whatever that possession or thing is. So I think possibly, and it's just me putting it in there, that he was more sorrowful, he was sorrowful in more ways than one. His greed sealed his decision to serve mammon rather than God. So, are we guilty of this? If your house were destroyed in a fire or a tornado, and we all know people where these things have happened, and of course Susan was evacuated last year, that fire was just right on top of them, and she has a beautiful, beautiful home, and lots of beautiful possessions, and you can't take everything with you, you know, no matter how much you pack up when you evacuate. So, what would happen if your home were destroyed by fire? How would you fare? Would you be willing to move on, focus on the things that you have and on the goodness of God, or would you mourn for all those things? Acts 2:45, when the Christians sold all they had and gave to those who needed it. Amy?
I just wanted to point out that Laura Godfrey was a good example in this. When her house got flooded and yep. she had all this damage, you know, instead she focused on people whose physical health wasn't good and realized that they had it worse than right. what she was dealing with. And she focused on others instead of herself.
And she I would hope that we could all be that way. But I think it's easy to get caught up in those physical things, even when we think we're not. Even when we think, okay, I have these things, it's all right. But what if something happened to all of them tomorrow? You know what that feels like. Mother's house burned when they were children. And to have no possessions? Awfully hard.
We didn't have much.
But it was all gone anyway. So those Christians in the first century who sold everything they had and gave to their brothers and sisters in Christ, certainly we couldn't accuse them of greed. But what if you knew...
Question. When it says they sold all they had, does that mean everything they had? Because we could give all we have and then we'd be destitute. So, but it meant most things are...
You're going to have to read into it. Yeah. Yourself, because that's what it says. But I agree with you that if you give everything and then you have to rely on the brothers and sisters to help you, that hasn't been... You've put yourself deliberately in a situation that can become burdensome to others.
There's another passage where Paul talks about that, and he says that they gave out of their poverty.
Right.
So I think the point is they gave all they had to give. They gave out of everything they could possibly give, they gave.
Right.
Whereas, you know, if they gave beyond that, they were giving out of their poverty at that point.
Right.
So.
Well, and we know we're supposed to care for our own families. Anybody who doesn't do that is worse than an infidel. So there is a line where we can have possessions, we can have earthly things. The Lord's given us the ability to have them. We know He expects that we have them because we're to lay by in store out of our gain. So I think they gave till they couldn't give anymore. That's what I think. So, Laura.
I was going to say, one time, it's kind of unsaid, I was talking to your dad about giving. Just giving in contribution. Mm-hmm. And I said, how do you know when you've given enough? And he said, well, if you think you've given enough, you've probably not given enough. And it was an interesting thing because we can't set, if I have two coats and I see somebody else, I mean, how selfish is it? Because I could be that person.
Right.
And it's kind of like how we talk about karma or whatever. But to to be in love with possessions is just sad. Because, well, as we're reading this, we came in naked, we're going to go out.
That's right.
We can't take it. It's foolishness, but it's almost like a pride thing on our part, which is kind of a scary thing. We get attached to things.
We do.
Very foolish. It's just earthly things. They go away.
I'm guilty of this at one point or another. Have you ever had an object that you liked and somehow it got broken or thrown away? Or how did you react? I've cried. That's embarrassing. Crying over some physical piece of something. How foolish is that?
I'm dealing with it. My mom passed away. I have things with my mom. There's nothing that I would buy, but it was my mother's. Mm-hmm. And it's hard, but that's not her. But it's hard.
And it's not your memory.
Yes, it's hard, though, when I it see is. Those things. So it's not, I've actually read a book on this, and it's helping me get through. But it is a foolish thing on my part. That's not my mom.
Right.
I still have those memories that nobody can take away. But I tend to sync them together. So it is, pretty valuable.
I think that we cry when something happens. It's a human reaction.
It is.
And acceptable. It's how long you cried.
Okay.
How upset you got, how long you held on to it. I think you cry, but then you get over it and say, it was a thing.
Right. It was a thing. So let's say that there's a brother or sister, and you know that they're in a real need. Let's say they have a medical emergency. And they need several thousand dollars. And you could give them several thousand dollars without it harming you. But it would squeeze you. It would be uncomfortable, but possible. What do you do? Give it to them.
I wouldn't even think twice, I don't think.
Yeah.
Everything we have belongs to God.
Right. Well, I just think it's an issue we all need to think about ahead of time, because then we're prepared for whatever comes along.
Well, Jean, don't you believe that God gives us more than we need?
Oh, absolutely.
We have those opportunities to help others.
Absolutely. I do. And I think how blessed to be in a position where you can, you know, where you're not the one in need, where you can help others.
And a lot of times you'll find that you really didn't need that anyway.
Yeah, what do you know? You got along just fine without it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Amy, you want to read what did I read? Luke 12:13 through it's a long reading, through 33.
Okay. Laid his hands on her. Oh, it's wrong chapter. Sorry. Okay. Page turned on me. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who appointed me a judge or arbitrator over you?" Then he said to him, "Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man was very productive. And he began reasoning to himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no place to store my crops?' Then he said, 'This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to myself, "So, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry." But God said to him, "You fool, this very night your soul is required of you, and now who will own what you have prepared?" So is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. And he said to his disciples, "For this reason I say to you, do not worry about your life as to what you will eat, nor for your body as to what you will put on. For life is more than food, and the body than clothing. Consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap. They have no storeroom nor barn, and yet God feeds them. How much more valuable you are than the birds. And which of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his lifespan? If then you cannot do even a very little thing, why do you worry about other matters? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. But I tell you, not even Solomon in all his glory clothed himself like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass in the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the furnace, how much more will he clothe you, you men of little faith? And do you not seek what you will eat and what you will drink? And do not keep worrying. For all these things the nations of the world eagerly seek, but your Father knows that you need these things. But seek first his kingdom, and these things will be added to you. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has chosen gladly to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to charity. Make yourselves money belts which do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven where no thief comes near, nor moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart is also.
So here was a wealthy man. He had more than he could use, obviously, because he already had barns filled with his goods. But his reaction wasn't to share and ease the burden of other people. It was to store up even more. In fact, he was going to go some trouble and cost to do that. He was going to tear down barns and build new ones. Now, even in that world, construction costs money. So he was, in order to get more and more, he was going to pay out more to do that. So Jesus said that one's life doesn't consist in the abundance of the things he possesses. Do you think this man's reaction was terribly different from many in the world?
Mm-hmm.
No.
You become blind.
Yeah.
It's human nature.
It is human nature. Debbie?
In my Bible, 17, 18, and 19, the verses, he uses the word I 6 times. Mm. He's so self-centered.
Yep.
Which
it's all about me. It's all about me and my money.
How we are these days.
Yeah. Well, in those days. Those days, too. This man was willing to go to extremes to lay up and went one step further. He said, eat, drink, and be merry. He's going to quit working now. He's got so much that he doesn't even have to work anymore. He said, let me find it. Eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow. I've lost my spot. You have many goods laid up for many years. I don't have to worry about it anymore. I've got it. Even somebody who's not spiritual should have thought, well, it could flood. You know, there could be a fire. But he's going, I've got it. I'm handled. You ever read anything about those lottery winners and what it does to their lives?
Big failure.
Big failure. Most of them immediately quit their jobs, which, you know, I got to tell you, if I had, what, $42 million, maybe I would not work.
Well, you need that kind of money, it's all that good money.
That's true. But, you know, he took it one step further. Not only did he have more than he needed, he's going to party now. Eat, drink, and be merry. I have enough for many years. And as far as I can tell, there is nothing in the Bible that says don't work. Everywhere I read about working, you're supposed to. Caroline?
Well, see, it seems to me that the problem in our society, at least, is that we continue to work even when we no longer need it. So it seemed that it would be more greedy to keep on working, to keep on accumulating the wealth.
Except that work in and of itself has benefits. And we are told by God to work, that idle hands are dangerous. And if you're working and possibly you have all you need, then you have more to give and to care for others. But I think the idea of non-working, as in really non-working, I don't mean just you don't have a job that pays you. I'm talking about people that really, truly think, I don't have to do anything. I don't have to cut my grass or brush my teeth or, you know, I don't have to do anything because I'm a privileged person with all this wealth. I think there's real inherent danger in that as well.
So you're not arguing against retirement funds or anything?
I am not. I think they're a good idea. Absolutely. Absolutely. And as long as we have provided for our family, then if we do have work for pay that allows us to do other things, that can be a good thing too. But you're right, there's plenty of work that doesn't get paid. It gets paid in other ways.
I would like to point out the woman's role, for instance. You know, I'm not bringing in an income. That doesn't mean I'm not working.
Right.
There's a difference between the party mentality that's being
right, that he was showing.
That
yes.
I'm just going to celebrate and right. live a life of ease and, you know,
sit on the couch and eat bonbons.
Mm-hmm. It's not how can I use this now that I don't have to work? How
right.
can I use this to serve others?
Right. And even from a financial viewpoint, a woman who's a wise mistress of her home is helping the financial situation. Mm-hmm. So there are many, many ways to work and serve God. But like I said, he had a party mentality. I've got money. I don't have to do anything anymore. And I don't think there's anything in the Bible that would allow that way of thinking.
It's hard work to pinch pennies.
It is very hard work to pinch pennies. It absolutely is. It pays off, but it's very hard work. And I used to get so angry with people who would say, "Oh, you're so lucky you get to stay home with your kids." Not luck. It's not luck. It's planning.
It's work.
It's work. It's hard. But a wise woman manages, because it creates a financial goal for their family, in my opinion. Okay. Lost my pages. Okay. Then we have Ananias and Sapphira in Acts 5. What about them? Their particular sin, remember, was defined as lying to the Holy Spirit. It was not defined as greed. Okay. However, what caused them to lie?
It was greed over men's praise, because they were told, while it was your own, was it not yours to
yeah, but they were told that later.
Right, but the point is, they were greedy for men's praise.
I think that's true. I think they were also greedy to keep their property. I mean, I think there was a tangible nature in there, too. But I agree that they wanted everybody to think well of them, because everybody, you know, that was that herd mentality. Everybody else is doing this, so I'm going to do it, too. I don't really want to do it. I don't have the right heart in doing it. But I'm going to do it so I'll look good. You know, it's the pretend Christian, the one that wants to be on the surface doing things that look right. But they weren't even going that far. They were still going to keep stuff. You know, they just were lying and putting part of it out there and trying to look good. So there are so many things wrong with that story. They kept part of the money. They lied to God. They conspired with one another ahead of time to sin. They wanted to look good in men's eyes. And it just goes on and on. What was the outcome for them?
Death.
Yeah. And immediate. Now, we get over to Luke 16. The parable of the unjust steward. And I'll tell you, this one, I have to struggle with this one. So I'm open to anything else y'all want to say. Laura?
Why do you struggle? Yeah. I'm so curious.
We'll talk about it. Okay, here was this unjust steward. He was unfaithful to his master. And his master caught on. He said, "I'm firing you. You're out of here." And the steward said, "What am I going to do? What am I going to do?" Laura, would you like to read for us? We're back in Luke 16, and we're going to read 1 through 14. We're back in Luke.
Okay.
16, 1 through 14.
I got 1
through 15. 15.
He also said to his disciples, "There was a certain rich man who had a steward. An accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods. They called him and said to him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward.' Then the steward said within himself, 'What shall I do? For my master is taking the stewardship away from me. I cannot dig. I am ashamed to beg. I am resolved what to do. Then when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses.' So he called every one of his master's debtors to him and said to the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' And he said, 100 measures of oil. So he said to him, 'Take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, 'And how much do you owe?' So he said, 100 measures of what? Of wheat. And he said, 'Then take your bill and write 80. So the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. And I say to you, make friends of yourselves by unrighteous mammon. Then when you fail, you may receive you into the everlasting home. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust is in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own. No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Now the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, also heard of these things, and they derided him. And he said to them, "You are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God."
Okay, so steward's losing his job. The master says, "Bring all your accounts up to date, because you're out of here." So he says, "Well, what am I going to do? I can't work. I'm too prideful to beg. How am I going to live?" So he said, "I know. I'll make all those people out there happy. They'll receive me into their homes when I lose my job." So he went to him and cheated his master yet again. "I owe 100 measures of oil, write out 50. I owe 100 measures of wheat, write out 80. And where I have a problem, and I think I figured it out, but I'm open to anybody else's thought on this, is the master, we found the right word, the master commended him because he had dealt shrewdly. What does that mean?
It seems to me the master is just looking at what's on paper. He doesn't know about his own business.
That's the conclusion I finally came to. That he looked at it and he got 50 measures of oil and he got 80 measures of wheat and he said, "Great, you, good job." But the steward was really cheating him further and was making his own bed. And Jesus went ahead to say, he said, first of all, the sons of this world are more shrewd than the sons of light. They're more willing to be dishonest, more willing to do things that aren't right because they're not serving God. But Jesus went on to say, make friends of yourselves by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. I think what he's saying there is, be cautious. Wherever you're making your friends is where you're going to wind up. And
he
if
commended him for his wisdom, but then he chastised him for...
Well, and that's the other commentary there. He said, you know, you're smart enough to figure out that they're going to take care of you when you lose your job.
But he was still wrong.
He was still wrong. So if you haven't been faithful with those people, you're not going to be faithful with God. And if you haven't been faithful to another man, you're not going to be faithful in your own. It's a heart issue. It's a heart issue. It's what you believe to be right and just and true is what you're going to do. And you're either going to follow men or you're going to follow God. God knows your heart. What is highly esteemed among men and is an abomination in the sight of God. I'm looking at the time here. We did say we were going to go to 11, right? Because we added our little thing at the beginning. So we have time for just a couple more verses, unless somebody else has something on that passage, because that one I think is troubling. What, Laura?
It just makes me think of when at work, when you get hired, you're told what you're going to do, and you're hired for a certain amount of money. But not long into it, people go, "Oh, I don't get paid enough to do this job." And I always look at them and go, "Did you not know what you were going to have to do?" Yeah. But people do that. It's like, okay, now I'm hired, I'm going to just be kind of sit back.
You know? Right.
And that kind of reminds me of this and that.
Yeah.
So,
well,
give your best.
I guess, and it's assumption, but I guess what he was doing in cheating his master was taking the difference. You know, I owe the master 100 measures of oil. Well, now this one, he just wrote it out for 80, but I'm thinking before that, he probably said, okay, pay me the 100 measures of oil, and he gave his master like 80, and he kept 20. I'm not sure how else he could have been cheating his master and gaining from it, but that's an assumption.
Not collecting what was
supposed to be. Well, he wasn't doing his job.
Yeah, but it says he was wasting the goods of his master. So maybe he was just making friends with those people in the world. Maybe that was it, that he got 100 and only had to pay back 80 or something. So, all right, so let's look at some other verses. Proverbs 1 says, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, 'Come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood,' we're going to go attack somebody. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us. Let's all have one purse." Now, first of all, casting your lot in among people who have that mindset is probably not the smartest thing just for your own safety. Let's go kill people and take what they have, and then we'll have a lot of possessions, but we'll all share them. Yeah, till they decide to kill you and take what's left. "My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood, lay lurk secretly for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who's greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owners." Now, not everybody who's greedy is going to kill people to get their money. But it says right here, the ways of everyone who's greedy for gain, it takes away the life of its owners. You start putting all your faith in those possessions and that money, and you don't have control of your own life because you're always after the next dollar. I don't think this is a new thing. We're hearing about it in Proverbs. And I think that may be the biggest problem in greed, is the way it takes over. And you don't think about spiritual things anymore. Not how much money you have or even who you've harmed to get there, but that your mindset is, we'll have great possessions.
Carol? I think of gambling.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to get it the next time.
Next time.
You're going to get it the next time.
Yeah. And I have heard people involved in that say, well, it doesn't hurt anyone but me. Oh, so untrue. So untrue. Very few of us are to ourselves in things like that. I frankly don't understand gambling. I'm too tight. I work too hard for my money to hand it over to somebody. Here, take this money for no reason whatsoever. So I don't get it. But I know that there are people that it just sucks in and they can't get away from it. And it's definitely fueled by greed.
Things happen so gradually. You don't start out that way, but then it just keeps going on and on again.
Yeah, it is. But I've been in various places. You know, there are some of those cities in Nevada where gambling's legal, that no matter what kind of store or anything you walk into, there are slot machines. If you in the airport in Las Vegas, there's slot machines, and just everywhere. You can't.
States in the Northwest.
Are they? Well, I'm amazed at the number of little blue-haired ladies I've seen plugging quarters into those machines. And they're just sitting there like this. Pulling out this. And I'm going, first of all, you don't look like you're having fun. Secondly, how much money are you putting in that thing?
I have a little tale to tell about this. We were spending the night in New York, traveling across the country.
One of those gambling trips, aren't you?
Yeah. But anyway, we were in this hotel, and here comes this big bus. We were still out of the loading. I said, oh, look at all those ladies. They're taking a cruise around the country. You know? My husband laughed at my
naivete.
Said, honey, this is where you know these people have come together. It's still funny to me that I thought they were having a great old time.
Roger said he was taking a train somewhere local, and I mean it didn't go very far, but at the train stop, and he said, I'm not talking about a big stop, I'm talking about where people get off and get back on. He said people would rush out into the train station and put a few quarters in the slot machine and rush back on before the train took off again. Now, the little bit of time that I was commuting on the train to Dallas, that getting off time just made me incredibly nervous. I just want to get off and be where I need to be because there's, you know, it's just this long. Sharon?
Talking like people
were
saying, when I was young, 1957, we took a trip to California and driving through Las Vegas. Of course, being young, you would go to the bathroom, so we had to stop. And I noticed I came running out of the restroom saying, Mama, I need a nickel. And she said, why? And I said, well, there's a machine in there. And if I put that nickel in there, I'll get an apple, an orange, or a banana. So even at that young age.
Well, they're sparkly and colorful, and they make noise, and they make way too much noise. So they're enticing.
Yeah, the gas station came running. Oh, she can't
play
that machine. Don't worry, she's not.
You have to be careful when you do something, too. When I was about in the eighth grade, we made a school trip. We stopped at this restaurant, and they had one of those little machines in there. Well, I didn't do anything. Well, kids, you know, they tease you. Keep on. I said, oh, boy, put your nickel in. I put it in, and I hit it. I was so embarrassed. I think I got about $5 in nickels. And so, never mind.
That was the last one of those?
Where'd all these nickels come from? Oh, yeah.
All right, well, we're at our stopping point, so we're going to start with Proverbs 15 next time. And I'm going to send Glenda Reeves a little note. She said, go ahead and, I can't be there, but go ahead and send me the handout. I feel certain you won't finish. Yes, I'm